Hi, everyone. It's time for Health Essentials with Dr. Roy Morgan of Jacksonville. Here's Dr. Morgan.
And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's a, man, what a amazing day. Rained all the way in. I like it. Okay, I'm going to give you full disclosure. Oh, by the way, this program is called Health Essentials. I want to do what the people want. And I know what people want. People do not want to consume things, you know, drugs that poison their body, that have horrific side effects, that are extremely expensive, that don't really address the root cause of the problem. What I want to do is I want to deliver information and let you decide for yourself. I mean, question everything. It's okay, isn't it? I had a woman yesterday. She said, well, you said I could question you. I'm going, okay. But she wanted to know what a particular supplement, what is the purpose of taking it, and why should you use it? So the reason I said I'm going to give you full disclosure is because this topic, to me, is so fascinating, so interesting. There's like a lot to it. There's so many different angles, but it kind of all comes down to the same thing. So, for example, if I say, what would be the definition of a vitamin? Well, you'd say it's just something that's a substance in nature that's essential for life. I mean, you've got to have it. Just like you can't live without vitamin A, and you cannot live without vitamin C. They're essential to the optimal functioning of the cells and the organs of the body. Well, I came across this article right here. It comes from 2017. It was a... It comes from Indonesia, but they did research. But just kind of hear me out, but I have not exhausted this topic enough to where I feel like I really understand all the ins and outs, but I'm telling you what, it's got my attention. And I tried to do a little bit of research, but I think I need a little bit more time to kind of flesh this out, but it's so fun to study this. So I think everybody knows what a cucumber is. Here in East Texas, we have so much sandy soil. There's going to be a few things that probably are going to be a little bit harder to grow because the soil is not really as nutrient dense as it should be or as what we'd like. But, I mean, you can grow cucumbers. I don't know anybody that can't grow cucumbers or squash. So, is that a fruit or is that a vegetable? Well, technically, it's a fruit. But if you want to call it a vegetable... fine by me. Anyway, let me get to the study right here. Now, what I want you to think of is, and I know this is going to sound a little bit different, but the obvious ones are that this topic is for anybody that wants to improve their blood pressure. Or I could say this is for anyone that wants to have clean blood. But this is so interesting right here because it's so easy to do. Anyone could do this. Okay, let me just read this to you. In the year 2017, Indonesian researchers, they published a small human intervention study in which they took 20 people. Now, I know that 20 people is not a lot of people, but it's so intriguing because if it can work on 20 people, what would it do on 200 people or 2,000? I think we've got something that you can at least consider as maybe being beneficial to everyone listening, even kids. So these 20 people, they were all over the age of 60, and every one of them had high blood pressure. Now, the truth is, some of their blood pressure readings were like almost, you know, scary high, like, I don't want you to have a stroke, I don't want to have a heart attack, we don't want to have a blood vessel burst in the back of the retina of the eye, don't want you to stroke out. So it's pretty scary. For some, the researchers had the test subjects drink a glass of cucumber juice twice a day, and there was really no control group. So when somebody hears there's not a control group, they don't like that. But I think this is so simple to understand that I don't worry about stuff like that. So each glass consisted of 200 milliliters of water. That's what they did. And 100 grams of fresh cucumber. So what the test subjects did was they just put the cucumber in a blender and they mixed the juice with water. And so, therefore, the subjects consumed 200 grams of cucumber every day. That's basically a small cucumber. Not one of those big, honking, large cucumbers, but a small one. So here's the results right here. After drinking 2 glasses of cucumber juice every day for a week, do you know what the systolic blood pressure is? That's your highest blood pressure reading. So if you took a blood pressure and it was 120 over 80, well, the top number, the 120, that's the systolic. And your lowest reading, that's a diastolic. Okay. So you got to remember, this is just a 1 week study, all right? 1 week. That's called 7 days. 24 hours times 7. So that's not a long period of time. Of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, what if they done this for like 2 weeks or 2 months or 8 months or a year? I'm just curious what would happen. Anyway, this is the average right here. The average systolic blood pressure, that's the top number, it decreased by an average of 16.5 points. So let's just say this. They measure your blood pressure, and it's 156.5 over 90. Well, it lowered down to 140 over, almost 80. In just 1 week. To me, that's really, really impressive. I mean, it's almost as good as a blood pressure medication. If you heard the things that I heard every week, I hear things like this. I tried every blood pressure medication that they had. Nothing works. Why should I take something if it has horrible side effects and it doesn't do anything to lower my blood pressure? Okay, that's a reasonable question, isn't it? Well, I'm going to counter with, well, maybe they're not addressing the exact reason why your blood pressure's up. So get this right here. It's just a 1 week study. They take a small cucumber, they add a little bit of water to it in a blender, blend it up, and they drink it. That's it. That doesn't sound like a remedy, but they have, I'm looking at the chart right here. They have the blood pressure readings, and I'm just going to read a sample to you. There's 20 of them. So the very first one, the average blood pressure of this person in the study was 160 over 100. After 1 week of just drinking the cucumber juice, it was 140 over 80. I would say that is a very significant improvement. Here's another one right here. They started out at 160 over 90, and at the end of the week, it was 130 over 80. Man, that's like almost perfect, isn't it? Here's another one. I'm not saying that I understand all these. There's a lot of moving parts. I mean, you take a person with a health problem, it's not just as simple as one factor. They might be dehydrated. They might be low in potassium. They might be deficient in magnesium. Maybe they're consuming things that are completely counterproductive to their health, like they're drinking coffee all day long. Or if you want to find a pretty good way to wreck a human being, drinking alcohol every day is a pretty good way of doing it. Listen to this number right here. Oh, I lost it already. Okay, no, here it is right here. One person, their average blood pressure was 180 over 100. Well, wouldn't you agree that's just way too high? Think of all the stress and the damage it's doing to your kidneys. That's why they call hypertension the silent killer, is because it just wrecks the kidneys. So this person started off at 180 over 100, but at the end of the study, which is 7 days later, it's almost kind of funny to mention that, in 7 days, it was 140 over 100. So the diastolic of 100, that didn't change, okay? Which in my mind, I'm thinking there's probably very significant damage to the kidneys. Folks, you don't even know how many people are in kidney failure, and they don't even know it. And the reason they don't know it is because when they go to their, I'll just say go to the clinic, and they have labs done for lack of physical, no one ever bothers to tell them. Or they may look at the blood test, and they might see elevations in certain markers, or some are lower than there should be. So if somebody has there's a very simple test called a comprehensive metabolic panel. What if the acronym BUN for bun, what if that's elevated? Well, that's a pretty good indication you've got some significant stress on the kidneys, okay? What if a marker called GFR, that's just an acronym for glomerular filtration rate? I know I'm an oversimplifier, but it's going to tell you how efficiently are your kidneys doing their job at filtering impurities and toxins and waste and even poisonous debris. Do you want to remove that from your blood? Well, of course. The kidneys are some of the most sophisticated yet elegant filters of the human body. It's a bunch of blood vessels and capillary beds. Here's another one right here. This person, their blood pressure was 170 over 100. And in 1 week, it had dropped down to 150 over 90. Here's another one I'm looking at. They went into the study. Now, this one's kind of scary, too. I don't like this one at all. They were 180 over 110. Well, folks, that is not good. If it stays at 180 over 110, it is going to literally destroy your kidneys and probably other vascular structures. You could have a stroke. But after 1 week, it was 150 over 100. Now, of course, you know, I'm not saying that that's perfect. But, folks, that is amazing. The systolic dropped by 30 points and the diastolic dropped by 10 points. All right, you tell me, would you rather your blood pressure be 180 over 110 or a week later, would you rather it be 150 over 100? Well, I know what you're going to choose. Now, let me tell you what the subjects reported right here, because this is kind of a side note. But maybe it's all the same thing, all right? The researchers said the subjects also reported they felt calmer after drinking the cucumber juice. I don't know, you tell me. How many people would like to feel calmer? Or do you really enjoy feeling agitated, irritable, frustrated, low-level anger? Have you ever been around a person, they're just angry all the time? Well, they need a glass of cucumber juice, don't they? Okay, some of the other people, they stated that their headache went away. Now, isn't that something? And the muscle tension in the back of their neck and shoulders, it was much lighter. And, of course, what they said is they used the term the nape of their neck. I know you know what that means. So, the tension in their neck and shoulders ceased to exist, according to many people. The researchers made a comment of that. Now, this is what the researchers are saying, so I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm okay with it. I think there's more to the story than what they're saying. The Indonesians suspect that potassium in particular plays a role in the effects, and it says a cucumber, this comes from the Journal called Circulation 2018. Anyway, a cucumber contains approximately 440 milligrams of potassium. It doesn't tell us what size cucumber. I mean, I've seen some big ones, haven't you? And I've seen some teeny tiny small ones. Maybe that's the average. I really don't know. I did not look up that study in Circulation to determine, but maybe that's what they're doing, is they're just saying there's an average of 440 milligrams of potassium. Well, that would be pretty good. Because usually the human body needs potassium. I don't know why I said usually. They go on to say also in the journal, the Archives of Internal Medicine 2005, that cucumbers are a great source of fiber and magnesium. Well, maybe those played a role. But I don't think I've ever come across a study like this, where you give it 1 week, everybody in the study is going to get some benefit. Now, yes, here's one person right here. Their blood pressure was exactly 150. That's a systolic over the diastolic of 100. And within the week, it dropped to 140 over 90. And you may say, it only dropped 10 points. Yeah, that is a good thing. I really wish this study had been done longer. That would be just so interesting. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Got a quick question for you. Does that study say it's a peeled cucumber or leave the peeling on?
I never read that far. I'm very sorry. But you know what? A lot of the nutrients on a is found near the peel, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know the answer to that. I'll look it up.
Well, I'd sure like to know that.
Probably did your mother ever cut up cucumbers for you as a child and put them in a little bowl so you could eat them?
No. I mean, she put them in vinegar.
That's what my mom did, too. She put them in vinegar, and we'd eat those. When's the last time you had a cucumber?
Oh, that long ago. We put cucumbers in water all the time.
Now, what I did do this morning was I typed into the computer, I typed in, how much pesticide residue can you find on conventional cucumbers? And this is what one article said. It said cucumbers, they're number 19 on the list as far as pesticide residue. But the way you get around that is if you eat organic cucumbers or you grow your own, then you don't have to worry about pesticides like Roundup and chemical and herbicides. Insecticides. Does that make sense?
Right. That's one reason I was wondering about peeling the cucumber, because the pesticides would be in the peeling, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when I've read research on apples, you've heard the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away?
Right.
Well, as far as I know, I'm the only one that's ever coined this phrase. I'm going to start a new phrase. A cucumber a day keeps the doctor away. Do you think it'll stick? But almost all the nutrients that really benefit the human being are found just right there at the level of the skin of an apple.
Yeah, I know it.
That's where all the polyphenols and the interesting compounds. So you're asking a good question, and what I'll do is I'll try to see if I can't answer that for you. I don't have a computer in front of me where I can look that up, but I'll see what I can figure out. That's a good question.
All right, good enough. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, at least I hope I've given you some food for thought about cucumbers. Actually, what do you have to lose? The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I'll tell you what you have to lose. You have to lose, some toxins and waste. You get to flush it out a little bit better. I mean, who out there wouldn't say that watermelons, which... I'm not saying cucumbers are the same as watermelons, but when you start looking at watermelons, like 97% pure water, and I think a cucumber is right at 95.5% weight or water volume. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have had persistent pain in my right shoulder and collarbone. And on top of the shoulder, it feels kind of like muscle pain or like I fell and hit the shoulder real hard, but I didn't. And also the right triceps, and it's persisted for at least a couple of weeks, maybe about 3 weeks. And it can be made worse by movement sometimes and sometimes not. So I'm wondering what that could be.
Was everything fine prior to 3 weeks ago?
Yes, it was.
Did you just like go to bed and one night wake up in the morning with your shoulder being sore?
Well, it seemed to develop a little more gradually than that, maybe over several days.
Well, what does it feel like at night when you're laying in bed and you're trying to go to sleep? Does your attention, does it go straight to that shoulder that's hurting and say, wow, it's starting to ache and hurt now?
Well, it doesn't really start at night because it's there kind of all the time.
Okay. How would you describe the pain to me? Is more like a very annoying ache?
Yes, and it's sort of like muscle soreness a bad muscle soreness that just won't go away.
Okay.
And it's just always present.
There's a small structure just under what's called the AC joint that stands for acromioclavicular. So the collarbone plays a pretty valuable role in making sure that your arm doesn't crash into your ribs, but it attaches to the shoulder blade. And so it forms what's called an AC joint. If somebody fell you know, off the back of a tractor and they hit their shoulder on the ground, they may have what's called a separated shoulder. That would be a pretty severe sprain of the AC joint. But there's a bursa under there. And a bursa is a small fluid-filled, I hate to call it a sac, but it kind of is. But it reduces friction. But when you have bursitis, it hurts all the time, especially when you move
it.
And so you may have developed bursitis. And so can I give you a little bit of background, and then we'll kind of start working into it?
Oh, sure. Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
As a general rule, the tendons become inflamed first, and then a person develops bursitis, unless there's some type of traumatic injury. That might be a little bit different. But if I told you the number one reasons, usually if the muscles become tighter, or another way of saying that is they're not as flexible and supple and spry as they used to be, and if they become weaker, so I'm just going to say stiffer and weaker, that's what leads to bursitis if it's not resolved. And so are you used to working out your arms and your shoulders like exercises?
Well, I did in the past, but I've kind of fallen short on that. I don't really work out like lifting small weights or anything like that. I've been neglectful of that in the recent past.
If I took my thumb, I know this is radio, I can't, but if I pressed right on that bursa and that tendon, I think it's called the subacromial bursa, if I pressed on that and you screamed as loud as possible, I would say, let me do that one more time just to double check. You know I'm joking about that. I'm not here to torture you. But if you pushed on that and you said, that's it right there, that is the worst pain, then that would be an indication that you may have bursitis. And, of course, what I can do is I can give you some things to think about as far as what can I do to help resolve it. Would you like to do that?
Oh, yes. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. So there's a lot of options here. Usually when I tell a person this in my office, they kind of laugh at me, and that's okay if they do. What if they got to lose by trying it? But one of the oldest remedies of all time is just finding a good specimen of a beautiful lemon and squeezing the fresh juice and finding a way to rub that all over the painful parts of the shoulder. But, of course, what you want is you want that fresh lemon juice to kind of be absorbed by the skin and the tissue of the body. And I don't know that I need to go into great detail, but let me just suggest that lemon juice provides very valuable components. Maybe it's flavonoids. Maybe it's vitamin C. Maybe it's hesperidin. Maybe it's rutin. Maybe it's a quercetin. But my point is, there might be things in there that help stimulate the healing process to where your immune system and your repair system can actually rise to the occasion and try to repair the bursitis and the tendonitis. Okay, so you can do that several times a day. Just rub fresh lemon juice, not the pasteurized bottle on the store shelf. That don't work. So just let it soak in. Give it a couple minutes, and you could try this. You could try applying extra virgin olive oil after the lemon juice dries. See if that works. Or you could try castor oil. I kind of think that every home should have a bottle of castor oil because it's just so valuable. Now, these next two, these are going to sound weird, but just kind of hear me out. If you don't like them, don't do them. There is a very famous tree that grows in places like Australia and New Zealand. It's called the tea tree. Have you ever heard of tea tree oil?
Yes, I have.
There are times that's all I need to tell a person to do for it to work. I don't know how it works. I don't know why it works. But if you put a drop or two of tea tree oil, maybe mixed with a little bit of castor oil or olive oil, directly on the area of pain, there's something about that that helps resolve the bursitis. I'm not sure what. The other thing you could try is rosemary oil, just a drop or two. Does that make sense?
Yes, sure does. Uh-huh.
Now, do you like to eat fruit?
Yes.
I don't see any problem in lemons. I mean, I know I talked about it topically, but I think that most people would benefit by just squeezing a juice of a lemon in a glass of water, or let's just say you like to drink herbal tea like hibiscus tea. What would be wrong about, you know, sipping on lemon hibiscus tea or lemon green tea or lemon water throughout the day just to get the nutrients? Because on one level, if something's not healing, there may be a nutrient you're deficient in, and usually I'll use natural forms of vitamin C and bioflavonoids to help bursitis to heal. So that's something right there.
Oh, great. Now, where I live, lemons are kind of scarce, but limes are plentiful, so that would be a good substitute.
Yeah, let's go with what you've got in your area. I'm guessing you live in North Dakota, am I right?
Actually, Mexico.
So lime trees are everywhere, huh?
Yeah, pretty much so. If you ask for lemons in a restaurant, you'll probably get limes.
Yeah. Well, is that what it is? Verde limon?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so, you can try those right there, but most likely that would be the first thing that I go to. Sometimes I'll take a little bitty rubber mallet with a wooden tool that I have, and I'll tap on it just in case that joint is like jammed together, just kind of break it up a little bit. I don't mean fracture it. I mean just tap it loose. So that would be some of the things you can do. But if you were to go to YouTube, you could type in what's called shoulder mobility exercises, and you could see if that helps. I tell you the other thing. I know what I would do if it was me. I would go to YouTube and I would type in shoulder mobility exercises, and I would just start playing with those, because this sort of thing right here, rest is not necessarily always your best friend. Sometimes it is. But if you go for the next 3 weeks without moving your arm because it's going to hurt, what do you think is going to happen to the integrity of your muscles and your joints? You're going to lose a lot of your muscle mass, and you're going to lose your strength. And that's a different problem. You don't want that. Usually the stronger, the more flexible and supple, the better. So you can try what are called shoulder mobility exercises. But I think what I would do, this is what I was getting to a while ago, I think I would get some Indian healing clay. Usually has a picture of an Aztec pyramid on the front of it, so that should be right up your alley in Mexico. But if you use the Indian healing clay, you can make a mud pack and just smear that all over the area of pain and see if, after doing a mud pack therapy, after about 20 minutes, just wash it off and see if it starts to heal. Stuff is amazing. It's cheap, too.
Indian healing clay.
Yeah, so if you were to go, like, for example, on Walmart.com or Amazon.com and type in Indian healing clay, you'd see it. It's like a little tub of it for like $9.97.
Oh, great.
You notice I'm purposely choosing the most expensive treatments of all time, right? We've got limes, lemons, olive oil, and now we've got dirt or mud. So that's what I would look at right there. Now, I could be wrong about this, but that would be my guess. If it hurts all the time, it's bursitis.
Okay, good. Well, at least now it has a name and some good things to try. So I'll try.
Yeah. I mean, after you get off the phone with me, just go to the computer and type in what exactly is bursitis, and you'll go, oh, my goodness, that sounds like what I have. Anyway,
okay.
I hope that helps you a whole lot.
It does, and I had what if I can ask one question again?
Yeah, sure.
Additionally, okay. I had a carotid artery scan, ultrasound, and it showed in one of the carotid arteries a 20% blockage. And I'm wondering if there's anything that I can do, kind of long term, or dietary, or herbal, or whatever, to discourage further blockage or reduce what's there.
Okay, now this may not sound super duper impressive to you, but I just want you to prayerfully consider it. There is a compound that is found in different herbs or plants, or it's just found in living things in nature. It's called berberine. Have you ever heard of berberine?
I sure have. Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, the other day, I was looking up some information about plaque in the carotid arteries. It's kind of funny you would bring this topic up, because I was reading about it. The first article that came up was about, what was it about? I don't remember now, but the second one was about berberine. I said, what? What do you mean berberine is good at removing atherosclerotic, calcified, cholesterol-rich plaques from the arteries? And so I clicked on it, and lo and behold, Now, I cannot remember the length of time of the study, but when they gave people with significant carotid artery plaque and also coronary vessel plaque, but lo and behold, berberine reduced the plaque. So I'm not trying to overstate anything here, but the this kind of answers your question or your request. It definitely reduced the plaque, which means the plaque was not worsening or progressing or increasing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I don't really remember the dose. I really just scanned the article. I didn't read the whole thing. But it was interesting because I was so pleased that I came across that. And I thought, wow, that's an arrow that you can put in your quiver if you need to have something. But berberine was very effective at reducing the size of the plaque. So that does help answer your question.
Yes. Well, great. Well, I will take that.
All right. Well, look into it. Tell me what you come up with.
All righty. Barrett's esophagus. Is there anything to do for that?
Well, I insist that people never eat wheat again.
Never eat wheat? Really?
Never. Okay. Do you want to have Barrett's esophagitis? It leads to cancer. Esophageal cancer? No, I know that's a rhetorical question. But that's been my experience. Modern wheat, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because they have sprayed it five times with glyphosate. Think about a crop duster flying over the wheat crop and spraying glyphosate or Roundup everywhere. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's because they've genetically modified it. But I just want you to prayerfully consider that maybe wheat might be pro-inflammatory of the esophagus, which would lead to Barrett's esophagitis, which, if it's not resolved, it leads to cancer almost every time.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'm not a big bread fan anyway, so I'll just skip it. Skip the bread.
Okay. There you go. Good deal.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
All this great information, and you have a great day, and thank you again.
You're sure welcome. Have a great one yourself. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, there's a phone line officially open at 903-589-8507. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a member of my family that has issues with hemorrhoids. And they bleed, they come out, they go in, and they have gone to the doctor, but I don't think they give anything. They just go to use the over-the-counter cream. What's your suggestion? And my question is why they keep coming back and forth. And
it's probably because they're extremely deficient in nutrients that maintain the integrity of the blood vessels. So basically, when you're... I know this is a horrible example to give, but have you ever heard of scurvy before? Well, with scurvy, what you do is you bruise easy, your gums bleed. So if a person's deficient in vitamin C, their blood vessels are just going to fall to pieces and they're going to leak. And that's what's happening here also. So most likely, they're not making what I would call the best food choices. I'm not trying to judge them. But you don't get hemorrhoids by eating a cup of blueberries every day. Blueberries are not the cause of it. They're probably, is this person taking drugs of any kind? When I say drugs, whether it's recreational? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No whatsoever.
Okay, so hemorrhoids really mean you've got too much congestion in your liver. Too much back pressure. And so if it's a male or female, their liver's clogged up.
Okay, it's a male.
Yeah, so his liver is clogged up. It's not able, it's just, and the blood vessels are just bulging at the seams because there's nowhere for the blood to go because the liver is just, it's like a dirty oil filter.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if I changed my air filter on my car and the air filter was like 40 zillion bees or flies or dragonflies or crickets, whatever you find in the air filter? And I would go, no wonder my car doesn't work right. It can't breathe properly. Well, that's just my analogy. So that's one of the reasons why lemon juice may be one of the greatest healing agents on the planet, because It's such a good solvent. And when I say solvent, if your husband had the dirtiest pants of all time because he had to dig up a broken water line and there's just like mud all over him, well, one drop of water is not going to get all the dirt out, is it? But if you had 10 gallons of water and maybe a little bit of soap, then you could help dissolve it because that's a solvent. Well, lemon juice is one of the best solvents for the liver. So one of the things they could do is they could drink dandelion root tea and they could squeeze lemon in it. Or if somebody said, I'm going to start squeezing lemon in everything that I drink, now we might be getting more of the nutrients that they're very, very deficient in.
And that would have to be the fresh one, right?
Yeah, that's been my experience. Or the gentleman that just called from Mexico, he said limes are what he has, so we're going to go with limes.
Okay.
I like the taste of limes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is anything else?
There's a herb called sometimes it's called stone root. But I always call it Collinsonia root. So, but that can help the hemorrhoids to, you're trying to get the arteries and the veins back in good working order. Or if I said we want to get the veins back in good repair where they no longer bleed. A lot of times I'll use fat-soluble chlorophyll to fix it real fast. That stuff is amazing. If you apply it, it'll just fix them about as quick as possible. But the bottom line is the person with the hemorrhoids is very, very depleted, and they're probably very, very toxic. I don't mean toxic personality. I just mean anytime the liver's clogged up, it does not do its job to efficiently remove all the metabolic waste and all the toxins that the body comes in contact with. But those the hemorrhoidal plexus, that venous system, is going to suffer every time. So those are some ideas right there. Is this person well hydrated?
I believe so, yes. I think they drink a lot of water.
Do they have any bad habits?
Can you elaborate? I don't know.
Yeah, a bad habit would be doing something that's not in your best interest. Like, I'm going to cover it from different angles. Like, you just lay on the couch all day long, meaning you're sedentary. That's a bad habit.
No, he's a hard working. He sweats a lot. He's worked a lot outside. So.
Well, maybe part of the problem is he's dehydrated. I mean, that's really, really common with hemorrhoids. Is a person's dehydrated?
Can a person drink a lot but not hydrate?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, for example, if the more stress that a person's under. And I guess stress is one of those things that's it's relative. But when you're stressed, that's when all the cells in the body, they begin to leak and they lose all these vital fluids and nutrients. They start leaking from the cells and so essentially become dehydrated. I wish there was a simple, cheap device that I could just, you know, have plants. You can do a hydration meter by sticking it into the soil. Well, I wish we had those for human beings. That was super. I mean, they're there, but they take time to use. But if we could determine if a person's cellular hydration was at 72%, I would say you're perfect. You've got 72% hydration in your cells. But people that have all the health problems, theirs is always lower, like 65, 64. So just being under stress all the time, you will become depleted. And the cells become weaker, and they start to lose all those vital nutrients and minerals and compounds that keep you well hydrated. That's kind of why I was talking about cucumbers this morning.
Mm-hmm. Is that a supplement I may suggest that can help strengthen the, did you say that?
Well, that's why I asked you if there's any bad habits, because, you know, sometimes people eat fast food all the time. Does he do that?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Well, what does he smoke cigarettes or does he drink alcohol? Alcohol would be the easiest way to wreck any human being.
No, none of that. No, they're Christian.
Were you suggesting that Christians don't drink alcohol? Is that what I heard you say?
Some of them.
No. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have made a joke out of that. The other day I read the U.S. Surgeon General's report on alcohol consumption. And it's just shocking. It says that 78% of all adults in America, they drink alcohol on some level. Now, the disturbing part was, if you have three alcoholic beverages a month, like a beer or wine, 11 out of 100 of those are going to develop cancer just because of the toxic effects of the alcohol. So if a person's drinking a margarita every day or three times a week, you can't be shocked if they have cancer. You just can't. Mm-hmm. But those are things that would be... So stress is probably the biggest dehydrator of all time. I don't know what this man eats day in, day out, but this does mean that his liver, even if it doesn't make sense to you, he's not in good repair. His arteries and veins are breaking down prematurely. So there must be something else going on with him. I just don't know what it is. But that's really what a doctor's supposed to do. They're supposed to help a person turn it around, or, I hate to say it this way, but why would we want to wait until the body has a heart attack or a stroke or a blood clot or hemorrhoids before we start taking action? I don't like that.
Yeah, no. Well, doctors don't seem to help him. So.
Well, has he been going to doctors and asking for help with this issue?
Just the hemorrhoids.
So what does the doctor say?
Nothing, really.
Okay, then. I don't like that either. Isn't that what the name of physician means in the Greek? It means teacher. You're supposed to say, well, let me explain to you why they have hemorrhoids. And so, I mean, that's what... Yeah, and so if you've got hemorrhoids, you need to avoid refined grains. Okay.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah, there you go. So, anyway, I wish I could help you more, but there's not much to go on. If you can't really tell me much information about him, then I don't know what else to tell you other than he needs to get in good health again.
I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's actually pretty common for a person to talk to me, and they'll say, Dr. Morgan, I am as healthy as a horse, you know, as a figure of speech, and nobody can tell me why I have advanced metastatic, you know, cancer, and why I have COPD, and why I have emphysema, and why I have advanced varicose veins, and why I'm exhausted all the time, because I say I'm so healthy. I'm going, are we, what? So you've got to be able to come to reality at some point and listen to your body. God designed it to warn you when there's a problem. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for your phone call today.
Yes, I was wondering, is there anything you can do? I've got several friends that they have been diagnosed as autoimmune disorder, either too high or too low. Is there anything that can be...
There's always a trigger, which means if there's an autoimmune, that means basically under certain circumstances, the immune system is starting to attack. Now, I'm going to kind of cut to the chase on this. Autoimmunity is the fastest growing group of diseases on the planet. Whereas, like, when you were like a little girl, how many people did you know of that had Hashimoto's or fibromyalgia or rheumatoid or lupus? How many people did you know when you were little?
Hardly any.
Yeah, but how about now?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a lot. So the vast majority are in women. Does that make sense?
Yes, because most of the ones I know are.
So I'm going to give you... I don't think I have to go in perfect order, but one of the things that would make women different than men would be the female hormone estrogen.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it seems that almost every chemical that they make in nature right now can act like an estrogen. So one of the aspects of estrogen is you can have like an estrogen overdose. And so too much estrogen is not good. That may promote autoimmunity. The other thing, if a woman is in good working order during her fertility years, every 28 days, you know, the amount of time it takes the moon to make one circuit around the earth, she's going to have her female reproductive cycle. And I'm not attempting to be graphic, but she's going to lose a certain amount of fluid or blood, but that's a mechanism by and through in which she can wash out and prepare the uterus to have a baby grow in there and have it clean and perfect. But one of the things a woman does during the fertility years is she washes out blood. But there seems to be a correlation between what's called vitamin B12 and autoimmunity. And so I don't really have to be a genius. I can just look at the studies on autoimmunity and find out almost all of the women are very, very low in vitamin B12. And so that just leads me to a point. What happens to the human body when you don't give it enough of the vital vitamin B12 that it needs? Well, things don't work right. And your immune system, it cannot keep itself in good repair. So those are two ideas. Third idea. Now, this is the one that a lot of people just scratch their heads, but it's just over and over again. It's just proving to be true. All cases of autoimmunity, they have a trigger or they have a weakness. And so, you know, really, this is what I should have said a while ago. The vast majority of a human being's immune system is really found in the gut. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes, I have.
I don't know that I can give you an exact, precise number, but let me say this right here. Let me say that maybe 90% of the entire immune system is found in the gut. And you ask, well, why would that be, Dr. Morgan? Well, that's because that's where your body has the closest interaction to the outside world. So if you eat an avocado or a ding-dong or a Pop-Tart or some Doritos, you know, your immune system has to deal with that. And so the immune system is like the great regulator of all inflammation. So what I'm building toward is this right here. If you're eating a particular food or a food substance that your immune system finds, you know, irritating or it's allergic to, that may not be the right word, but you get where I'm coming from.
Yes.
Your immune system can counter by just generating huge amounts of inflammation. And if a woman or a man is swimming in huge amounts of inflammation, that can lead to what's called a leaky gut. And so if you have a molecule of undigested corn, as my example, pass through that leaky gut when it's not supposed to, if enough of it gets in the bloodstream, your immune system has no choice but to say, oh my goodness, what is this foreign protein doing in the bloodstream? Why is it over here in my liver? Well, that could cause the body to start stimulating production of antibodies. And so with the case of eczema, what if a molecule of wheat or dairy or corn settles in the skin? And really all your immune system is doing is just trying to keep your body clean, but it says, we've got to remove this. But if your body produces too many antibodies, it's you attacking yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So I know I'm long-winded on this, but every single case of autoimmunity, I haven't seen one. I've seen thousands of those cases. There's always a food that is their weakness or their trigger. I mean, you've heard of the most researched autoimmune disease of all time, haven't you? It's called celiac disease.
Yes.
There was a study done in 2001, and this is what it said. And the only people that were in this group were people that were of Jewish ancestry. That's all I remember. I couldn't tell you any more than that. And so what I thought was interesting is they divided one category into two different groups. And here's what it looked like. One group, they absolutely had no gluten, no gliadin, no wheat whatsoever. None. They didn't eat a bagel, there was no muffin, no sandwich. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That means they ate everything but wheat, no gluten. The other group, and listen to this, this is going to blow your mind. In this other group, they just had one serving of wheat, an average of once a month. So I don't know how to interpret that, other than maybe they had one muffin a month or one cookie a month. I don't know. You tell me. The ones that only ate one serving of wheat, which contains gluten, per month, they died 7 years earlier. And so the point that I'm going to get to is, does that sort of explain how deadly it is to consume something that causes your immune system to fight against you? It does. It'll wear you out.
Goodness.
So you got to pay attention. But every case I've ever seen of autoimmunity, it's because of toxicity or toxic food. But at the end of the day, what do we want to do? We want to rebuild and heal the immune system where it has tolerance. And we want to fix the leaky gut. If you don't fix the leaky gut, you can't fix autoimmune problems. That's where real food comes in, like chlorella. Have you ever heard of chlorella?
Yes.
Guess who made it?
Yes, God.
Good answer. That, hey, if I had been offering a prize like $3, would you have you've won?
Yes.
I didn't think of it in time. Okay, so almost every case, you're trying to find out where the weakest organ is. And so with autoimmunity, it's usually going to hit one or the other. So gut, liver, gallbladder, adrenal glands, kidneys, something like that, spleen, thymus gland. But unless you find out the weakness, then you can figure out which food they're allergic to. At least that's what I try to do.
Yes. And how do you fix...
you remove the food they're... How do you fix the liver?
Yes.
Okay, now this is a really, really deep topic, but one of the ways is you got to clean up the diet.
Okay, okay.
So it's inconceivable to me that a person would say, okay, I'm not trying to make fun here, I'm not trying to make a joke, I'm not trying to be critical, but a person can't say, Dr. Morgan, there's no way I'm giving up my 20 beers a day because I love them so much. Well, you're not getting well. Evidently, you don't mind being sick all the time.
Yes.
And I realize those things are addictive. I'm not trying to make a lot of that, but if you want to find a way to wreck a human being, drinking, you know, alcohol every day, that's a pretty good way to wreck your liver and keep it from healing, right?
Yes.
Okay, the other thing is, if your dietary regimen focused on eating clean meats, actually, I'm going to give you like a bonus here. If you want your liver to get well, eat fish. Eat more vegetables and eat good wholesome fruits like lemons, limes. I think one of the best fruits for the liver of all time is called the avocado. And there's so many people that don't like them, but I am not one of those people. I like avocados.
I'm not either. I love them.
So you're good with avocados, right?
Yes. Yes.
So you have to put clean food. And the other thing you have to fix is the liver is kind of the hub of all metabolic activity. I know I'm going off track here slightly, forgive me, but one of the main jobs of the liver in a woman is keeping all the female hormones in balance. Now, I'm the only one that's got enough, you know, wisdom to understand this fully, and nobody else will, but females are hormonally different than men. Is that like a bold statement to make?
Yes.
Of course, you knew I was making a joke. Of course.
Yes.
Women are so much more complicated than what men are hormonally. But you've got to get the liver back in good working order. So what I mentioned to the person earlier is, how about putting lemon water into your body? That your liver would love that. How about drinking dandelion root tea? That'd be so, so good for the liver. Have you ever heard of dandelion root tea?
Yes. In fact, I think we have some.
If you want the liver to heal, you could give it milk thistle every day. How about that?
Oh.
You can start eating things like artichokes. That's really, really good for the liver.
I do love liver and onions.
Oh, my goodness. You're the first human being I've heard say that in the last 20 years.
My husband doesn't, but I do.
Well, what if you held him at gunpoint? Would that change his attitude?
He said no.
You know what? They do sell, you know, there's a large dog called a Rottweiler. If you got one of those shock collars, you know, I'm just
put
easy.
Around him,
All you got to do is just hit the vibrate mode, and he goes, oh, you know what?
Yes.
I was wrong, sweetheart. This is looking really good. Yeah, and so the more cruciferous vegetables that are high in sulfur, that's going to be cabbage. I think that one of the superfoods, the greatest ones of all time, is going to be an unpasteurized sauerkraut. And if you want to call that, they have every variety you can think of, but you call it kimchi or Japanese style sauerkraut. Oh man, that stuff is awesome.
Yes.
So those are some starting points.
Okay. And I was going to say, because I'd gone to the doctor and I'd had, it's kind of like a, I guess it's a, just a raised place, you know, not a rash, but it's a...
On your skin?
Yes, underneath my bottom lip. And they kept telling me that they didn't know what it was. And then
Well, I do. Your body's trying to push some toxins out.
That's what I, like, finally, about the third time, I finally figured out that they called it autoimmune disorder. And then I was like, well, so they sent me some, of course, steroids, and I took them for a while, and then I quit because it wasn't doing any good. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try something different.
It's just not addressing the root cause of the problem.
Right.
So do you eat bread at all?
Yes, sometimes I do.
Well, I would recommend you give up all wheat and all corn and all starches and just focus on meat and vegetables. But there's a lot of people. I see tremendous improvement if they just incorporate more fish. So your husband may not be a huge fan of liver and onions, but I'm sure this afternoon he would like to go to, let me see, what's that river in Oregon? Is that called the Columbia River? He could sit right there with his fishing pole in the Columbia River, and he could probably pull out some salmon for you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I'm not crazy about fish, but I can learn.
Well, it's going to be one of the best forms of protein that really helps the body rejuvenate and rebuild and repair. I could literally talk to a woman that all she does is drinking coffee all day long, and I could say, you can get better if you just start drinking lemon water.
Yeah.
But you can't make a person do that.
What about tilapia fish? Is that?
Not my favorite, but that would be better than eating pork chops.
Oh.
me and a buddy of mine, we went bow fishing over at Martin Creek Reservoir. Do you know where that is?
No.
It's over at Henderson area, other side. And he tried eating the tilapia. Nobody could do it. They tasted so bad. And I looked up an article, and they're full of toxins from that power plant. So a lot of times, and that's what fish do. If they're raised in an environment where the water's not clean, that's where you got a problem.
Oh.
Just like if you had a garden, you said, hey, Dr. Morgan, come try my cucumbers. I took raw sewage from the sewage treatment plant. Yeah. That's what my fertilizer. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm all good. I'm not even hungry today. I'll pass. Yeah. And so a lot of times we're living in an age where there's so many chemicals everywhere. Yes, I would love to say that we're living exactly in the Garden of Eden before sin, but we're not.
Yeah. We will someday, but not today.
Not today. You know what? That would be the greatest goal or work, is that you run the course or you finish the race with endurance, being faithful to the very end so you can win the prize.
Yes, absolutely.
I had a man try to explain to me the other day that you can do exactly anything you want. You can commit as many sins as you want because of, you know, we are under grace now. And I thought,
grace,
that doesn't even make sense. Yes, we have to have grace, right?
Yes.
There's nobody that could ever make it without grace. But that doesn't give you license to commit endless amounts of sin and then call it good. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
But there are some people that believe that. I know that.
Yes, yes. But that grace should make you want to try that much harder, knowing what he did for you.
Oh, that is so well said. Yes, ma'am. Man, you made a great statement there. I totally agree with that. That's what grace should do. We should be all the more grateful. We should strive all the harder, not because we're earning our salvation, but because of what he did for us. It's so amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
I agree with you.
Thank you very much.
And you know what? The other thing that you said that impressed me is you said you love some liver and onions.
Yes.
Well, thank you for your phone call. I think I'm out of time.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.